Hey, what's up, listeners? It's your boy, Rum and Apples. We're doing another Rum and Apples show. You know what time it is. It's motherfucking Monday. So if you're at work, if you're at the game, like in The Simpsons, because Homer Simpson thought Jim was pronounced game. I clearly remember Homer was trying to get in shape, and he was looking at night, and he goes, game? What's a game? And he walks in the gym and he goes, oh, this is a guy. That's a game. I'm like, what the fuck? A game? What are you doing, Homer? You're a silly man. You're a silly fucking man. I love The Simpsons. Don't know why I brought that up, but everybody, you know what's going on. Full podcast can be found on everythingisrum.com. I'm very excited that website has been launched and that we have a place for all the full podcasts. It's just completely branded, I guess. I guess I just like everything that I do in one direct source, where if people, like, don't know where all the podcasts are found, I say it every fucking episode now, but if you don't know, if you want to find a full podcast and you just found us through the YouTube, or you found us on iTunes, and you didn't know I had a website, it's everythingisrum.com. A lot of people know I don't even have a website. They just think I'm a podcast on YouTube. That's kind of crazy, isn't it? But also, big update, people. I know I've been talking about the Rumatorial, okay? The footage has been filmed. The audio has been recorded. It's all a matter of editing right now, okay? I know this is long overdue. It's just a lot has been going on with that show and the creation of it. I'm putting a lot of effort into putting my focus and my own creativity into really what I want to accomplish with that, with my little attempt, I guess, into independent filmmaking crossbred with a strange YouTube premise template. I don't know. I'm doing it because I like the direction, I guess. All right, you know, other than that, not much more going on. All right, people, donation drive will be coming up soon. I don't know how I'm going to get this goddamn thing, this goddamn audio to you all. I think I can give it to you guys once I set up this other funding site. Now, I'm only doing it so I can do, like, donation drive stuff. So, you know, the hardcore Rum and Apples listeners, like Apple Cores and, you know, Roche Army fans and Cobra TV people can come by and, if you do donate or whatever, you'll get the Spec Ops The Line video game storyline analysis podcast. Now, that's primarily what I'll be doing. And a lot of them, the first one, the why we got Spec Ops The Line, I did it on a voter basis. Like, I let the listeners and everybody on Twitter go vote and what they wanted to see. And Spec Ops The Line finished strong, so I'll be doing that one. Kind of disappointed a little bit. I wanted to do Medieval deep down in my heart, but you know, the universe didn't call that for me. That's not the purpose I was given. I have to do Spec Ops The Line. Don't get me twisted. Spec Ops The Line is a game worth investigating. There's a lot of, well, I guess the blatant layman way to put it, it's a mind fuck. And that's always a good thing. You know, some of my favorite types of entertainment, if I have to put them in any type of category, is stuff like that, of that nature, like Fight Club, such as an Alan Wake game, such as something like an Outer Limits, such as Black Mirror, something that I enjoy, products and entertainment that make, that alter your mind to the sense of you'll sit back and you'll think about it and digest the information about 20 minutes later, and next thing you know, you're on Google and you're looking up things you never ordinarily would, just on the base of gaining knowledge. And I think there's a benefit to being curious. And I think when we didn't have the finer, more refined bits and versions of technology we have before Google, right? You know, one thing I found was really interesting that I looked back at my own life and I went, oh shit, I can't remember dick anymore. I can't remember fuck all. I really can't. I can't remember shit. And when I was a kid, not even as a kid, as a teenager, I'm not even that long removed from a time period in my life that I can recall when my memory was far better. Now, there could be a lot of exterior circumstance to why my memory isn't as good as it is, to why my short-term memory is, why certain outbursts, you know, just mental shit. Everybody has it. Like, everybody's brain chemistry is different, and you notice changes in your personality, and I look at myself then, I look at myself now, and I realize, Jesus, I can't remember half of the stuff I used to be able to retain. You know, some stuff stays in your head. for me personally, some stuff stays in my head, like video game stuff stays in my head. Muay Thai, certain things stay in my head. Techniques stay in my head. You know, fights, some fights stay in my head better than others. Like Aldo, not Aldo, I apologize. Alvarez McGregor just happened, UFC 205. You know, McGregor knocked him out in second round. I was like, oh shit. You know, that's that I'll remember that fight. But I'm pretty sure my memory is going to be somewhat, probably pretty inaccurate of what went down in that fight. But I'm going to remember the ending of it, right? I'll remember the last bit, or I'll remember the outcome, knowing that McGregor did win that fight. Like, I'll retain that a bit of knowledge, but I'll forget certain elements that took place. But I won't forget certain strengths and weaknesses of guys or girls that are fighting. Now, that's a totally different side, but I also think about my use of Google. And I think everybody's uses of Google. I kind of feel like, in a way, I've substituted my own memory for Google because, in a way, subconsciously, I probably think it's always going to be there. So, I want to be able to kind of escape from that in a weird way, but I'm almost unsure how. The only way I've really discovered it is to, write things down. Do the oldest method that I know of. The oldest method that I was born into, I was raised on. Like, to retain information, you write it down. And write it down, and you read it every now and then. That's the oldest way I can. Or you read the material till it's verbatim in your brain. Now, I could do that too, just, I don't know. I'm going to do both, and hopefully my memory is going to get better. I just think it's something interesting. I think it's disastrous that my memory has gone that bad that quickly. And I wonder how many other people that's happened to. But enough philosophical brain chemistry, you know, scariness that we want to throw in there. But enough of that. Let's kick off this motherfucking show. Let's get some gaming news taken care of, and then I'm going to go a little light on the gaming news. I have no fucking clue how long this podcast is going to run. I am very backed up with other shit I got to do, but fuck it, man. You know, I got to cut a podcast. I love doing it, so you know what? It is what it is. We're going to start off with some movie news. Here's what's cracking down. A lot of people have been talking about video game movies and successes of video game movies, or more popular conversational topics are the lack of success that video games movies have had. Not necessarily in the financial aspect, although that is a very legitimate point in the topic of conversation, but more we're talking about the creative differences and the creative problems of properly translating a video game IP over to a cinematic presence, because it's a difference of experience. The major difference is the interactivity, okay? A video game, you're able to control when you continue the narrative, okay? You're able to control. You have freedom in how you experience and how you take in the information presented to you through with the electronic stimulation of the visual interface, which is the video game. In a movie, it is very different in how your senses are kind of attacked. When I mean attacked, I mean how your senses are drawn in to look at this certain image or care about this sound, okay? It's just a very reactionary process. Either the movie is able to pull or force an experience, a reaction, an emotional reaction or a physiological reaction from your body, which is a mental reaction, of course. It's different because you're not able to control the action of what's happening. You feel me? So why do I talk about all this stuff and going into video games and this weird analytical layer? It's because The Rock's Rampage movie. Okay? Rampage. We know Rampage, the video game. You know, where you were the monkey or the lizard or the other one. I don't remember what the other one was. I always played it as the evil monkey or the green lizard. But the Rampage video game, it lives on forever in Nickel City and emulators everywhere. Okay, here's the cool part. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, is going to be in a movie based on the Rampage game series. All right, so according to Warner Brothers, it's going to be April 20th, 2018. This is strange. I have no judgment right now. The reason I say that is because it's a weird resting ground this game is at. Not the game, but the movie property. Because Rampage is a video game series that I wouldn't necessarily go to and say, oh, that'll make a great video game movie. But there's a possibility it could. It's a very blank template that, if constructed properly, you got three gigantic radioactive monsters that are destroying the world. and you got The Rock in it. Now, biggest question here, is The Rock a monster or is he the person trying to stop them? Well, I'll just say it for everybody right now. I don't think one person out there wants to see The Rock be the guy that has to stop the monsters. I think everybody on planet Earth wants The Rock to be the monster. I really do. Also, there's one question I have deep down in my soul that I have to ask before I move on to anything else today. In the Rampage video games, when a monster is actually defeated, they demutate and they're naked and then they run off screen slightly embarrassed. We did see Central Intelligence with The Rock just, you know, stripping off his clothes at the end of the movie and, you know, showing the hammerhead shark. So there's a possibility that that naked thing might happen. I know. People everywhere either creamed their panties or dicks got hard. I mean, I know The Rock's a handsome man. It is what it is. So, The Rock's Rampage movie coming around in April 2018. As a video game movie, I don't know how it's going to be creatively with the video game movie. I think with The Rock, it's going to be an action movie, clearly. And what do you really want to say? What do you want me to say about it? Like, I don't know. I don't know what to expect other than this might be a movie that may sell very well. And The Rock, he's very good. He is one of the few wrestlers that turned actor that has been nothing but movie franchise Viagra. He's been nothing but good. I mean, I know he has his critics and I haven't liked certain things that he's done, but I'm saying overall, he's a very well-received actor. People buy him in what he does. He does well in tough guy roles. He can do well in the roles that he does when he has to do sensitive shit. I really believe it all came from pro wrestling. Even The Rock says it himself. But when it comes to the video game movie itself, I don't know if this is going to put video game movies onto a point to where people respect them. But at the very least, I believe The Rock could bring people into theaters to watch this thing. Now, I think there's going to be a lot of nostalgia factors. I think there's going to be a lot of... I think it's going to be a family film in the sense of PG-13. Because I think Citywide Destruction, and I see The Rock being a mutant or something. He's going to be one of the monsters. And then maybe there's going to be a forced romance angle that forces them to demutate and live a normal life. Why does that sound like every American fucking action movie ever made? But hey, might happen. Battleborn is not exactly a game that a lot of people care about. I can't blame them, personally. It is clear that Overwatch is the choice of the two similar styled shooters. It's not really a surprise there, but Battleborn has, well, not Battleborn necessarily, but the community of Battleborn, the player base, is trying something interesting. Okay, so players of Battleborn have pretty much just taken the reins themselves, and it's something that I actually like. Now, before I get into anything else about this, regardless of the turnout of this, because this is the last day that Battleborn players can help save this game, and what do I mean by that? Members of Battleborn subreddits, of the Battleborn subreddit, they organize something called the Battleborn Day. It's from the 12th of November till the... I apologize, when was it? I was just looking at the dates incorrectly. It was from Friday the 11th of November till Sunday the 13th of November. So, it's the last day that you could possibly do that. Now, this podcast is coming out on Monday, but I'm recording it on a Sunday, so... Today's the 13th, tomorrow's the 14th, so it'll be over. So no matter how this turns out, I want the Battleborn community to know, like, I commend you guys for doing that. Because it's always good to see a level of players come together and really try to care about the game. It's essentially the audience is going, hey, take one more look at it. This game... You might have passed it over. We know it's a MOBA. We know you don't like Gearbox. We know you don't give a fuck. We know Randy Fuckford's a piece of shit. He doesn't care about us. But look at Battleborn one more time. That's what they're saying. And I get it. I'm not mad at him. But on Battleborn Day, the Reddit users were expressing frustration at the lack of action to what was going on. Okay? Here we go. He says, let's talk about why it didn't succeed at the beginning. Overwatch competition, lackluster marketing, bugs, glitches, and balancing issues. As time went on, the problem shifted to low player base and large skill gap, plus the matchmaking. So the question is, how do we bring new players and keep them? Well, if we can get an event going for a day where we can get as many players online to play as many games as they can, this will solve matchmaking issues and allow everyone to try the game. They continued on to say, as a community of high-level elites, these are people who play Battleborn, like hardcores. As a community of high-level elites, that's fucking crazy that they say that. Just say, as a community of people who play the game a lot. We should recognize... like, that's so... Like, I'm sorry, but that's pretty narcissistic, man. High-level elites, we're the elite of Battleborn. Our thumbs are more skillful than your thumbs at the physics engine. Oh, fucking hell, man. It's so ludicrous. It's so ludicrous. Oh, God. Don't get me wrong, though. That's kind of like those street karate guys who talk about, I'm a guru, bro. I'm a guru, dude. I know. I got 12 black belts, dog. So, I understand why they want to do this. I really do. I'm not mad at them. I'm not mad at them at all. Now, mind you, Gearbox even posted on the Battleborn website to thank the community. And say they're going to help the event. They were going to give them Ludocalypse, play with the devs, double XP, double credits. They were giving them special Battleborn Day Q, all kind of fan favorite maps and modes. 29 Battleborn heroes, every character is temporarily unlocked for all players. 20% off games, skin, 20% off skins and taunts. Marketplace giveaways. So, now, I love hearing all of this. Don't get it twisted. I love that the gamers took the bull by the horns. They put the foot on the gas. They got a fire under their ass to say, we got to save our fucking game that we love. Here's the problem with all this. The one problem I find with all this. Why are gamers having to do this? Why is the community having to do this? This is not... I love what you guys did. Don't get it wrong, guys. I'm not blaming the Battleborn players. I'm simply questioning, why does the publisher that comes out with the game not have a remedy for this type of problem? I'm not saying that they expected the Battleborn to sell so low they just didn't care, but it kind of feels that way in a way. It's almost like, well, if you knew the game was going to underperform, shouldn't you have some type of post-launch plan? I don't know. I'm not a fucking game publisher, okay? But what I would think is a smart thing... or a smart idea would to be have a post-launch plan on how to handle this game, including events and other ways to reintroduce a new population into your game, to keep longevity, create new ways of replayability. And I do not mean downloadable content. I do not mean microtransactions. I'm talking about things like this that can impact the game, that can bring a new demographic into it or bring old people from the current demographic that you lost. I find it amazing that the players had to do this to get 2K to get Gearbox to give a fuck. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing that it had to be the gamers' initiative, that the company can't do that themselves. That's the only thing that really disappoints me. I have nothing but good things to say right now about the Battleborn community. The problem I have is with Gearbox and with 2K. Because this is something that I believe that one person probably said in a meeting months ago. But maybe they fell on deaf ears. I don't really know. I'm not saying I know. But I feel this is something that the company could have done. I don't feel that this was the player's responsibility to try to save their fucking game. Now, maybe the company was just trying to cut their losses, and maybe this was the notion that made them say, oh shit, maybe we should try again. Maybe we should start caring. Or make Battleborn go free to play and give it modability support. Why? Because Overwatch doesn't do that. And what do you have to do if you have two similar type templates of a game? You have to bring something that the other lacks to make up for the fact that you are similar. Overwatch doesn't do modability. Make Battleborn a modability game that is free to play. I'm not saying it's going to work. I'm just suggesting that as an idea. I'm not saying it's the ultimate solution. But I'm really happy to see that the Battleborn players really had a fire lit under their ass and they were actively pursuing a solution. I have nothing but appreciation for that. What I don't appreciate is Gearbox and 2K not having the knowledge to do this before the players had to. You know, Epic Games founder Tim Sweeney has made his way into gaming headlines and video game news sites all over the world, universally, globally, all over the internet for many multiple things. his opinions on the UWP with the Windows deal that he was talking about, right? So he also talked about, I remember when Gears of War got sold, that he had a lot to do with that at a certain point in time. Also, interestingly enough, Epic Games chief Tim Sweeney has made headlines again. How this time, do you ask, paid $15 million to protect 7,000 acres in the North Carolina wilderness? That's pretty cool, man. Never thought of a game company being conservationists. Really kind of intriguing, man, and I actually kind of like that. All right, so this, mind you, in North Carolina, this donation was earmarked as a conservation easement. Okay, so what that means is it requires landowners to forfeit the right to develop, subdivide, or interfere with the preservation of natural landscape. So I like this. It's a good example of what other game companies can do as far as conservation and protecting our environment. I mean, it's something that I don't talk about very often, but I do believe that it's important. Now, I'm not going to get into the scientific debate of everything everybody wants to argue about. This is not the reason I'm talking about this. I'm simply talking about, at a simple level, this is a very nice gesture that Tim Sweeney is doing. It is. He paid $15 million to the Fish and Wildlife Services to permanently protect 7,000 acres of undeveloped land in North Carolina. So that means no malls can go up there, no fucking stupid parking garages, no goddamn golf courses that are wasting water. Part of the reason why California is in a fucked up situation that they're in. I said fuck like three times, couldn't put together words. Don't know what the hell's going on with that. But I like what I like it. You know what I mean? Now, mind you, if you want to go a little bit of information onto the area that Tim Sweeney had invested the $15 million in, it is known and called the Box Creek Wilderness. Years ago, it was going to be subdivided to make room for Rutherford Electric Membership Corporation to construct power lines. Then Tim Sweeney, who was previously owned smaller parts of that land, he went to court and he fought him back. And now this is the result. This is actually the result, okay? He's permanently protecting that 7,000 acres. Now, apparently this is not the first time that Tim Sweeney has done something like this, as being a conservationist and protecting the environment, protecting, you know, things that actually provide us with the ability to breathe. A lot of people don't even consider that. Sometimes I don't even consider that. I'm not trying to say I'm better. I'm clearly not. It's just strange. And not strange. It's just wild to how little we think about these things till somebody makes a gigantic impact. You know, greatness is very intriguing. I'm not saying Tim Sweeney's doing something is greatness, but he did something that shows greatness. It shows a care for other people. It shows a care for your environment. It shows a care for your surroundings around you. It shows a care for your future. The future in general. It's a very interesting mindset. Tim Sweeney was buying land originally in 2008, and now he apparently owns roughly 40,000 acres in that state of North Carolina. And then some of which he's actually donated for conservation. So that's amazing. That really is awesome. That's a nice guy. Sounds like a benevolent games chief. Really does. Now, the only scary part is, I wonder if he turns into, like, Dr. Evil 10 years down the line and goes hella supervillain on us. That's the only thing I see could go awry. Maybe he talks to Vince McMahon. Maybe Vince gets in his ear like, hey, you know, Tim Sweeney, we have a nice agreement over here, you know. Shit, Tim Sweeney, don't hate me, man. Just jokes, buddy. One of the Overwatch voice actors has come out. What the fuck am I talking? He didn't come out the shit. He just talked about the voice actor strike and the reasons voice actors matter. I'll go through the whole thing, all right? The SAG-AFTRA union are currently in the middle of a strike, and they're negotiating things like better payment. Now, let's not confuse anything. The union is talking about this as a human rights issue. And to a certain degree, I can understand. They're talking about stressful voice acting. They're talking about royalty benefits. At the end of the day, people, don't confuse the fucking situation. This is about money. That's all this is about. It's about money. Okay? It's about money. It's about royalties. It's about making sure that the video game voice actors who have done video games, that if they are a part of a game that has sold more than a certain amount of copies, blah, 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 they get a royalty out of it. Okay? We know this. Okay? If you look at the fucking list of demands, We know this. Not to mention that other fucking companies have adhered to a lot of them. And SAG-AFTRA is not as gigantic as a lot of people think. Okay? If the other publishers don't agree with SAG-AFTRA and they strike, SAG-AFTRA are not big enough to completely affect the video game voice acting market. Okay? Video game voice acting is bad enough as it is. Why? I'm not saying anything against them, but like some of these dudes and people suck. Why are they still working? I'm just saying. Okay? Jokes aside, oh man, I gotta get off that fucking line. If we get back to the facts of what's going on and my own, outside of my own goofy little opinion, the shit I'm just joking about, one of the voice actors of Overwatch, his name is Crispin Freeman. He was talking about how disappointed he is when it comes to talking with publishers. And he's talking about them negotiating for up to 19 months in good faith. It was the longest negotiation SAG-AFTRA has ever done. It was the last thing they wanted to do. They didn't want to strike. Okay, he was asked on what the most ideal outcome of the strike would be. Freeman's answer said that he wanted the voice actors to be ensured safety, respect, and a little bit of shared prosperity, and that their contributions are treated as something valuable. They say right now, and this comes from Crispin Freeman. Now, Blizzard is not one of the companies that SAG-AFTRA is actually striking against. So this is why he can come out and talk about this and give his point of view, because I guarantee no other people that are striking with SAG-AFTRA are going to be able to come out and talk about this. You know, they're just not. It's not going to happen. There's going to be a silence. Unless it's an executive shilling some bullshit. Freeman pointed out one major thing. That publishers would not tell them what the game they were hired for. They would not tell them the context of the role and how fairly the payment was for the work. Now, I've talked about this on other aspects, on other podcasts, on other videos, and other conversations, Uncivilized Banter, other podcasts with other hosts and different shows I've done about this situation. And he's right. Because video game companies, publishers, how many times have we heard problems of developers getting fucked and then fired after a game's completed? Do you see what I'm talking about? This is not the first time this has happened. I don't think it's the last time it's going to be happening either. I think this is the first of many problems. Now, truthfully, I've said a lot of things, and while I agree with certain aspects of what the Overwatch voice actor was talking about, I don't always think unions are a good thing. I really don't. At the same point, even if they strike and SAG-AFTRA, to a certain extent, I feel is a bit power hungry, and all they're really interested in is their paycheck. So, I find it weird because a lot of things are networking based. Okay, so I guess the best way I can describe this is if video game companies hire out independently to people, the same thing is still going to be able to happen. So I don't know how far this is going to go. I hope this strike is resolved peacefully. So I don't know if you heard about this, but Watch Dogs 2 had copies arriving early. And guess what? The multiplayer doesn't work. We had no shit. The fucking game isn't out till the 15th. So why would you expect it to work? Not to mention, this is modern gaming. Why would anything work until day one? And even then, why would it even work when you have something called a day one patch? It's like you guys don't even remember the history of terrible launches of games that come out and require day one patches because at launch, they're not fucking done. They're not finished. This is a scam. This is a scam. Now, Watch Dogs 2 is not a scam. I haven't played it yet. When I play it and I assess it and when I and however I feel about it, I'll give you my thoughts then. But I'm just talking about the fact that the copies are arriving early and the multiplayer doesn't work. Yes, no shit, it doesn't work. Should it be working right now? Yes, it should. I'm not going to deny that. It absolutely should. But you know what? Fair balls to it being broken at pre-launch. If it works on launch day and there's not a problem outside of the necessary day one patch that you know Ubisoft is going to throw in there and possibly fuck shit up with, either or, if this is fixed by launch day, it's a non-issue. I'm not trying to make this a big deal. I'm just simply saying that this is a great example of how many games. It's another example of how many games are not even completely expected to be fully working, to be fully functional, even the multiplayer component on launch day. What's another big one that happened? GTA. That was another huge one. And guess what? Has anybody played that multiplayer recently? I know people love it, but have you tried the matchmaking on it? It's some of the worst that I have ever experienced in my life. They match you up with another person's internet connection. If someone just... Oh, it's a frustrating fucking experience. That's all I'm trying to say. Let's just hope this is a non-issue for Ubisoft, okay, when the game comes out. That's all I can really say. I'm not even trying to bash on Watch Dogs. I don't try to bash on Watch Dogs. The biggest thing about Watch Dogs and myself is I want to like it. I do. I want to like Watch Dogs. But everything about Watch Dogs 2 makes me not want to play it. It's not that they improved anything. There's just more of it. That doesn't mean it's better. Okay? If you get a shit sandwich, like in the stupid people section I talked about last fucking Friday, if you get a shit sandwich and you eat it, and you digest it, and you perceive that it's good, but you know it's not good, you're just tricking yourself into it because you know you spent $60 and you probably bought a season pass. So you probably spent around $110, and you don't want to admit the fact that you wasted your goddamn money. There's a lot of people like that who subscribe to these insane ideas because they want to be right. They want to be right more than what is actually truth. What is actually the true scenario? The true scenario is Watch Dogs is going to be a franchise whether we like it or not, even though we know fully fucking well that this game can't even hold weight. That's the sad part. Take the DeLorean. Push yourself inside. Talk to Einstein. Pet the doggy. Buckle your seatbelt. Make sure the flux capacitor is there. Because if it's not, you got to go on a wild adventure and you might have to look at a Polaroid of yourself and then you see your hand fading into non-existence. And then you got to play Johnny B. Goode on a guitar with a bunch of musicians. And then you got to smoke weed and then pretend to ride a skateboard and then lie and then tell your mom that your name is Calvin Klein and that you're not really her son and that she's trying to bark up the wrong tree and that's kind of incestuous and ooh, ooh, ooh. Back to the Future's weird. But outside of that, let's remove all that weirdness and just take a DeLorean, okay? Stan Smith style. Ooh, take a DeLorean. 1997, Diddy Kong Racing. Fun game, okay? Fun game. I liked it, okay? Why did I like it? Because I was younger. It was 1997. I was a kid, okay? There's a bunch of grown adults right now who are freaking out and jizzing in their pants over fucking anything Mario Kart related. So calm down, people. Okay, just a memory. Jokes aside, literally, it's kind of interesting. There was something called Diddy Kong Racing Adventure that was a canceled sequel. It's really intriguing. Apparently, it was developed by the game. It was developed for the GameCube, not by Rare, which is the strange part. It was actually made by Climax Studios, who is of Silent Hill Shattered Memories fame, which is not exactly the greatest fame you want to be, remembered for. Who the fuck wants to be remembered for that Silent Hill? No, you want to be remembered for Silent Hill 2 or Silent Hill. The first Silent Hill is all right. Like, if you want to be the guys who made the first Clock Tower, those are people you can look at and go, oh yeah, I like you guys. You guys were fun at a certain point in time of existence. If we look at this, a little history, it was in development around 2004. Diddy Kong Racing Adventure was going to be it was going to consist of 16 villages with 3 courses. You could free roam on the hub connecting various villages. Each village would be drained to color, but then by when you completed races, you'd restore the landscape you'd give color back and restore the landscape. So they also talk about mechanics, and it's just a game that was never done. And Nintendo never commissioned it, and Climax just said, nope, fuck the prototype, done, we're done. Because they tried to pitch it to another company who turned it down. It just didn't do well. Now, I kind of understand why this would not succeed. I mean, come on, dude. There's Mario Kong. I'm not Mario Kong. What the fuck am I talking about? Mario Kong. That's probably close to the original Donkey Kong or anything else. No, just there was Mario Kart 64. What? That's your answer. There was Mario Kart 64. That's what everybody had. I'm sure other people had Diddy Kong Racing. They also probably had Donkey Kong Racing. Maybe. But pretty sure a lot of people just played Mario Kart 64 back in the day. Donkey Kong Racing took place around early 2000s, I think. I'm probably wrong. I'm probably totally wrong, but I think early 2000s. But if we go back into the 90s, like, dude, everybody had Mario Kart. Like, it wasn't about Diddy Kong. It was about Mario. That's just obvious, I would think. Oh, shit, bitches. Oh, shit, motherfuckers. I gotta give you motherfuckers some news. Something ridiculously. I gotta be honest. Hold on. I'm too fucking happy to talk about this. One of my favorite games that I played for so many years, Plague Inc. Evolved, is adding the Brexit and the vampires sickness in the latest update. Oh, shit. Oh, balls. Scare your children to sleep with horrible stories of Plague Inc. games that you've played in the past. Oh, God. Okay. Shadow Plague adds Brexit events. Okay? What is Shadow Plague? Okay, we're going to talk about this. The Shadow Plague is a sentient mutagenic pathogen. It triggers a powerful thirst for blood in its chosen host. Can humanity defend against a powerful vampire attacking from the shadows? That was said on the Steam community page. Intriguing. That's awesome, man. I love it. I absolutely love it. They have vampires. Get the fuck out of here. You know what? That's great. That's great. There's nothing wrong with this. Here's why. Plague Inc. is a simulator game that will pretty much, here's what you do. You infect the world, you kill the world. You infect it with the virus and you destroy it. Simple. And then you play it out and you watch what happens and you control the outcome. What's so wrong with that? What's so hard about that? It's fantastic. Why is it fantastic? Because it's fun. It's absolutely fun. What's better than being your own biochemical warfare freak of just nature? Essentially, you're nature killing humanity. Or if you put it in other scenarios, you're man-made things killing humanity. It's just fun. It's all it is. Endemic is fucking awesome. Endemic Creations is one of the most... Endemic Creations. They have created Plague Inc. Evolved, which is one of the most fun games simulator games I've had. I've had happiness to play. It really is. Not only that, I just thought about it. You have the standard viruses, including the zombie virus and the simian virus. Now you have the vampire deal, the shadow play. Fuck around. It's going to get crazy. It's going to get crazy. Not to mention that Plague Inc. Evolved, as far as the simulator base, has a huge amount of mod support, and the modding community is balls to the walls crazy. They come up with insane shit. They came up with, like, a kitty disease. They came up with a Hank Hill disease. They came up with the PewDiePie disease. They came up with the technology disease. One creative motherfucker, don't know who you are, but shout out to the dude, the modder who made the I have no mouth and I must scream plague mod. That's probably the best one I've seen so far. It just shows the amount of ingenuity and creativity that modders possess. I'm very happy that game sustained moddability and that they introduced it into the final product. No, this is dope. Go be a vampire. Go fucking murder humans and drink their blood. Go be a part of the vampiric culture. Now, don't get it twisted. It's not as if that they're just going to let you die. You're just going to kill humans and they're just going to die for you and just like, oh, give me your neck, Dracula. Lick my neck, bitch. No, it's not going down like that. You got vampire hunting Templars, plus the World Health Organization who was going to try to kill you. You got to cover the world with darkness. Fuck around. This is incredible. Fun shit. Absolutely. I am in full support of this. Let's talk some Mass Effect. Before I go into this, I want you to be very clear on my stance on this. Be very careful about fucking Mass Effect Andromeda. Be very careful. Do not be deceived. All right? Mass Effect Andromeda is most likely going to be another shooter, another third-person general shooter with some RPG elements. Okay? You got some squad stuff. Got some exploration systems. Here's the problem. Mass Effect is at a point to the popularity is so large and it's so salivated over to where BioWare is going to bait and switch you. All right? They're going to bait and switch you. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm merely suggesting that the likelihood of this possibility is higher than a lot of people would like to admit. This is going to sell well, undeniably. Mass Effect is invested and injected and a part of video game players all over the world, mainstream and hardcore's DNA. That's what we have to be concerned about. Mass Effect Andromeda is not linked to any other game in the Mass Effect series. Okay? That was intentional. That's intentional. Why is that intentional? Because that tells me that any gamer who might not even played the first Mass Effect can say, ah, I don't care about Mass Effect. It's a totally new story. It's a totally new game and it's self-contained within one game. What does that mean? That means it's intentionally constructed for people who have never had interest in the previous Mass Effect series to pick up Andromeda and to play it. So what does that mean? We know what this means. It means they're appealing to the casual market, which means this game is going to be streamlined, which correlates with the possibility that it could be a dumbed down third person shooter with the elements of RPGs and just enough of it to keep the hardcore players realizing that it still is a Mass Effect game loosely. Now, I'm not going to say it's not going to be fun. I'd be lying if I said that. Of course it's going to be fun. However, I believe the side missions are probably going to be a little tedious, probably more tedious than usual. I think there's a lot of people who like Mass Effect, you know, the fans of Mass Effect, I think the Mass Effect fans, I'm even in this fan base, okay? Now, here's what I mean by that. I hate Mass Effect with a fucking fury, but here's the problem. I've played all three of the games, so deep down inside, I have to like something about Mass Effect. And truthfully, what I think I like about Mass Effect is probably the gameplay element. Maybe I like the story. I mean, there has to be something about the story that invested me in the first place. So I know that there's a root of Mass Effect, which is probably narrative-driven, that makes me care about it to the point that I get that upset about this. Because I wouldn't get upset about something unless I cared about it at some point in time. That's a common, like, theme in when all human beings get angry about something. So I'm sure I have a love-hate relationship with Mass Effect. That's how I feel about it. I guess that's the best way I feel about it. And I like BioWare as well. Here's the problem. BioWare has screwed the pooch a lot. BioWare has fucked up a lot with the latest releases. Okay? BioWare, I guess the best way to put it is like this. I fear for Mass Effect Andromeda because BioWare is your drug-addicted friend. You love them. You want to do everything you can to support them and help them. But you know, deep down inside, at the end of the day, they're not reliable because you're very disappointed in who they are because the curtain's been pulled back. Positivity is something we don't often see in the video game world, but we found some. Hey, found some for you. Did a little digging, did a little more Googling, did a little more pine coning with my Nimbus, and I found some video game developers donating portions of sales to the War Child charity. The developers involved are the people of World of Tanks, Verdun 1914, Democracy 3, and 1979 Revolution Black. And then Black Friday are donating all portion of their sales. World of War is selling packs of 3 or 10 peace emblems for players to wear. All net proceeds go directly to World Child. The makers of Democracy 3 and 1979 Revolutionary Black Friday will donate the net income of their sales to War Child for a period of time. No idea how long the period of time is, but it's good that they're donating in net income. It's pretty nice, actually. It's a lot. That could be a lot. Democracy 3 is going to do this from 21st of November to 2nd of December, while Revolution is going to do it from the 28th of November to the 2nd of December. That's pretty cool. And from the 16th to the 31st, Verdun and 1914 is going to sell a Christmas Truce DLC on Steam, inspired by the actual truce between the French, German, and British soldiers for Christmas in 1914. That is pretty awesome. There's nothing negative you could say about that. I think that is there's two reasons why this is incredible. And I've said this a lot before, but I'll always say it again. I'm going to repeat it into the ground until more gamers start doing this shit. As terrible as gamers treat each other, this is a good example of the people who make the games that we play and that we find entertainment from are donating to a good cause and are doing something that is legitimately going to help people. And if there's anything that I've ever said on this podcast, if there's any way that I could reach you and grab you by your face and pull you close and talk to you and tell you that we have to be nice to each other. There is so much insanity and bitterness and sadness and terrible, horrible circumstance that surrounds this earth and our planet. And I know we can't do it, and I know we can't all see that sometimes, because as myself, I'm included in that situation. Sometimes we cannot see the forest through the trees and the scope of our lives because it's been magnified and we hyper-focus on our little initial things we have to contend with. But the grander scale is, this type of shit's important. It provides awareness to what is real suffering. I know the suffering we face is real suffering too. I'm talking about a different kind of suffering. The War Child Charity is doing a good thing, and everybody involved in this, developer-wise, is they're doing a fantastic service. And it's a good reminder of gamers, we have to be kinder to one another. And in light, it's always something that I find intriguing, and I think it's mesmerizing. Because I don't believe in fucking magic, right? I don't believe in that shit whatsoever. But you do feel a sense of something, whether it be positivity or you feel a euphoric feeling when you read stuff like this. When I read stuff like this, when I read that there are independent video game developers, now reminder, these are indie dudes. These are not dudes that have millions at their disposal next to their piles of cocaine with their switchblade knives in it, you know, railing stuff. Okay, these are independent guys who have families and things to take care of, and I'm pretty sure that it's not exactly smart from a business sense to donate to charity when you're an independent studio and you have to worry, and you'd probably do have to worry about your profit margin more than a major company does in certain aspects. Okay, in certain aspects, I'm not getting into that. But regardless, it's always nice and lovely to see people dip out of their pockets and really try to help. So, I mean, if you play these games or you know anybody who might want this game, maybe get him a Christmas present. This is a perfect Christmas present for somebody who you might just want to get him a game. Because it goes to a good cause and you're getting somebody something that you think they might enjoy. What's better than that? Nintendo Japan is going to be shutting down the Wii U production very soon. So that's not any surprise. I don't know why that would be a surprise to anybody. We heard rumors about this for how long? Long time. Very long time. You know, the Wii U launched in 2012. Probably, I'm looking at the articles and I'm looking at a couple different sites right now. They're saying around 13 million Wii U systems actually got sold. And that is a tragedy. That's a tragedy. That is a commercial failure from all, as far as every regard. Compared to the Wii. We know that the Wii netted over 100 million sales. We know that shit netted over 100 million sales. But the Wii U failed. The Wii U did not work. Not really surprised why the Wii U did not work. I can't exactly say that I'm surprised for it. It sucks. But in a way, I don't know. Maybe the Wii U should never have come out. And maybe this is weird. Imagine if, like, think about this. Imagine if they went from the Wii U, not the Wii U. Imagine if Nintendo released the Wii, they never released the Wii U, and then they came out with the Nintendo Switch. I'm not exactly sure if that would be a better move, but I would think it would make Nintendo far more relevant if they did it from that path. Because at that point, it'd be like, okay, Nintendo hasn't released a major console anytime soon. They'd probably release another handheld to supplement themselves or work in the mobile things. Because I still believe they would have released Pokemon Go regardless. Okay? I know that's very far away, but I still believe that would have happened regardless. And then the Nintendo Switch comes out. That might have worked. But It just sucks. Nintendo Japan is shutting down the Wii U. I can't even think of one thing I played on the Nintendo Wii U. Can you? Can anybody? Who buys Nintendo Wii U products outside of hardcore Nintendo fans or families? Really? And I'm asking that seriously. I really don't know anymore. I know that there's holdovers, nostalgic holdovers. They're in the 30-year-old market. You got families who are going to buy them because kid consoles, right? And then they also probably have another console or a PC that they game on. But nowadays, kids are gaming on PC a lot too, so that's also that might conflict with what I'm thinking about. But either way, I think that might be a byproduct of the parents owning the PC because kids can't buy a fucking $1,500 gaming rig if they're five. It's not happening. I don't know. That'd be weird. All in all, I feel bad about the Wii U because I really can't remember shit about it. That's kind of weird. I really feel that I should have felt something about it. But I also remember when Nintendo pretty much said, no, we're never gonna get rid of the Wii U. Why would we do this? What are you talking about? You guys are funny. Nintendo, the Wii U's shutting down. You're being silly. Yeah, then the Wii U shuts down. They go, oh, we didn't know this would happen. Oh, shit. You know what? Not shocking at all. The Switch is coming around, and you know what? It is what it is. The positivity in gaming continues as there's been a group of group of video game preservationists that have gotten their hands on some never-before-archived Kirby minigames that were distributed by Nintendo Super Famicom Satellaview system. Now, the Satellaview system was hard for them to preserve because video game historian and developer Frank Cifaldi, and he said this on Twitter, that they were typically downloaded via satellite onto a special rewritable Super Famicom cartridge that could only hold one game's data at a time. Wow, that sounds like a terrible method of distribution. That's a shitty method of distribution. Who distributes shit like that? That's nonsense. That's such a crazy, complicated method of distributing your fucking game. No wonder it died. No wonder it didn't work. It's fucking terrible. But the video game archivists, they got together and they raised money to acquire the Kirby minigames, part of a 10 minigame collection known as Kirby no Omocho Hako. I think that's how you say it, from an unnamed auctioneer. So yeah, the auctioneer is not going to be named. They got it. They got the games, and now they paid $813 for all four games. Pretty interesting. So they're gonna preserve them on ROMs. Holy shit. Okay, so here's what's gonna go on. The preservationists that got the Kirby Satellaview games on the satellite deal, the satellite distribution thing, that didn't work at all because it's a terrible idea. Just in the first thought of my mind, everything I know about tech. No, fuck that. And I'm not even that smart about it. But yeah, they're going to put them on ROMs and they're going to live on forever. Watch, they're probably going to sell them and they'll probably make handhelds of them later. Someone's going to pirate them. Watch this happen. Jokes aside, I'm happy about this shit. I really actually like it. I really do like it. I mean, I'm not trying to say it's universally, monumentally moving or it's going to change the landscape of video games, but it's just kind of cool. It's just kind of nice. It's kind of nice to know they're like, oh shit, we're going to be able to get some Kirby minigames that we never saw before, that most of us never saw before, that a large majority of people that are gaming that are alive today may have never seen or even knew about. At the very least, for they could be donated to the Strong Museum or a copy of them for the Video Game Hall of Fame. I think that's very good. I think this is going to find its way into the additions of video game museums and video game Hall of Fame places. I really believe it. Here's some creepy fucking video game that we can talk about. There's a cell phone horror mystery game called Sarah is Missing. Now, Sarah is Missing, this comes from the official site, so their blurbs are their own words, not mine. I am just being the parakeet. Bop-bop-bop-bop-bop. Check it out. Sarah is Missing combines through a cell phone that you found in an attempt to locate its missing owner. Of course, Sarah. Okay, now developer Moonson Lab said they're inspired by Replica, where you have to find and highlight pertinent information in order to progress. And you'll look over Sarah's emails, messages, videos, pictures, calls. You'll take calls and you'll chat with people. You even try to piece together corrupted data with the assistance of the phone's artificial intelligence. That's interesting. Now, there's the presentation. If we want to look at the presentation itself, it's very similar to her story with images and video recordings. So there's a lot of red herrings. There's a lot of bullshit to throw you off. I kind of like this stuff. Why do I like this stuff? Because it's one of the few types of video games that we don't often explore enough. These types of games, like Orwell, the game, you know, the Orwell game that I talked about, probably a couple weeks ago, maybe a month ago on the podcast, on the Roman Apple show or something, where you were Big Brother spying on people, essentially, using Facebook and stuff. That's creepy as fuck. And this one is equally creepy, because if you put yourself in the situation and allow the suspension of disbelief to take you away, it's a game on your phone. You know what I mean? It's a game on your phone. So you get to play, you get to experience it. And there's enough content in there, supposedly there's enough content in there to make it feel unique enough. Now I'm going to play it and I'll let you guys know how I feel about it. And apparently it's cheap. All right? It's cheap as fuck. So you might as well check it out. I'm definitely going to fuck with it. I'll let you guys know how I feel about it. But that is going to do it for the Rum and Apple Show. Thank you very much, everybody. If you want to go donate to the podcast and help support the Rumatorials, which we got a new camera, we got a new stand, so we got some updated visuals for you coming up in the future. All right, go to t.m.gibson@gmail.com. Donate $5 or more. You get a porn name that I make for you. Why? It's a gimmick we came up with on Uncivilized Banter. I know it's weird. We don't give a fuck. You know how it is, baby. Other than that, you guys have a good one. And if Skynet does not become self-aware, I'll see you next time.